Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty, and I will be joined a little later by my brother Brian. I'm hoping anyway today. I guess we'll see. He's out and about. He's meeting with a bunch of farmers. This has been a fun time of year for us already. Just getting out, talking to a lot of farmers about what's going on, and man, is there a lot of stuff going on. When you think about all the stuff that's going on in China and new traits getting approvals and this type of thing, that's kind of, I guess, exciting. And also, you know, in terms of the soybean market and so forth, still a little nerve-wracking. So you've certainly got that issue going on. Then you look at what's happening with crop protection this year, you know, with all the different mergers and buyouts and so forth. There's a lot of products that move from one company to another. I mean, look at all the things that BASF picked up with the Bayer and Monsanto, or the Bayer-Monsanto buyout. Wow, BASF's got quite a portfolio. Then you look at Bayer representing products that they haven't represented before, and so that's kind of cool. And, you know, there's just a lot of different things happening out there. Then you look at all the rebates and the tie-ins, and if you haven't been in to meet with your agronomist yet, wow, get in and do that right away. And here's the other thing. If you got through the end of the year and said, well, I need to prepay, I'm going to use the same program I did last year. If you're using the same program you did last year, chances are you're probably paying too much because there's a lot of different tie-ins that weren't there last year. And there's also some rebates that are bigger than they were last year. There's quite a few deals out there, and you really do need to ask around a little bit and find out, okay, what are the programs? What are the alternatives? And you know, here's the other thing. When it comes to crop protection, most products out there, it seems like anyway, are off patent. So there's lots of different alternatives where, all right, I like mesotrione. Well, I can buy that in about 10 different ways. So would I like it in this premix or in that premix? And would I like it with this tie-in rebate or with that tie-in rebate? And wow, that's kind of fun as a farmer to say, all right, it's more work. I'll give you that. It's more work, but it could save you a lot of money. And Brian and I are doing a workshop starting on Wednesday of next week called 101 Ways to Cut Farm Expenses Now. And it's going to be easy going over 101 ways because there's so many different things this year that you could do just slightly different, get the same result, and spend less money. And that's awesome. Everybody wins in those kind of situations. So really excited about that. Then you talk about seed and what's going on right now. Well, there are all kinds of things. In the Mid-South, one of the questions we've been getting a lot from growers is, boy, there's some soybean quality issues this year. And even in the upper Midwest, there are some seed companies that are really struggling, just depending on where you're at. There are a lot of rains late season last year that let anthracnose and especially phomopsis in, which is pod and stem blight. And wow, have we impacted seed quality in many cases. I was just talking to a seed company production manager today, and he said, we've got some soybeans that germed 50%. And I said, well, that's easy. Junk them. He's like, yeah, here's the problem. They're all coming in at 50 or 60 or 70% germ. So that's not a good situation. So I said, what's your solution? He said, well, if we treat them and then germ test them, they're germing out about 80. So if we can kill, you know, some of that phomopsis that's on there and other diseases that are on the seed, if we can kill them, well, all of a sudden now when the seed germinates, it doesn't have all those diseases on it. So seed treatment this year, that's going to be a big time deal. So you want to make sure that you're treating your soybean seed and working with the seed company that you're buying soybean seed from to make sure you get good quality seed to plant. You know, on the corn side, so far we're hearing pretty good things around the industry. It seems like demand is good, but supply has been good as well. So it seems like the corn business, for the most part, is going through the season here without any big hiccups. So that's kind of interesting. You know, when we look at some of the other crops, like today, we're going to talk about sorghum a little bit on our show today. We don't get enough time spent on sorghum. And I get it. There aren't as many acres as there are with corn and soybeans. But what's happening in the sorghum industry and how are all these talks in China impacting that too? That's going to be kind of a fun discussion today. We also have our phone lines open. So if you say, I don't want to hear about the crop protection stuff, or I don't want to hear about the seed stuff, I want to talk about fertilizer, I want to talk about my soils, give us a call, 844 844-AG-PHD is our phone line. You can also send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We're getting a lot of questions. I actually have quite a stack here. For those of you who haven't called into our show yet, if you call in, you're going to catch my sister Janelle. And Janelle printed out a bunch of the emails that have come in, and we got quite a stack. So we're going to have to try to get to the Ag PhD mailbag a little early today. We'll see if we can get that done. And also, if you want to find us on social media, we're on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. You can see what's going on there. Okay, yesterday we were talking about high-yielding soybean tips, and wow, when it comes to profitability this year, if you can raise a few more bushels without spending any extra money, that's going to be a big moneymaker for your farm. And it was interesting. So we had three different producers on that are all getting just fantastic soybean yields. And what was one of the common denominators? Well, one thing that was a real big takeaway for me was planting early. And the guy said, you know, sometimes it's not like crazy early. Maybe it's just a week before everybody else is turning the wheel out there. But if you can get in and get those soybeans in the ground in decent condition, it's a 7 to 12 bushel difference. Well, that's huge. And you think about corn, and I know my brother too, and I, we've grown up on a farm where we got to get the corn in first. And we have pretty much planted the corn first and then come back with soybeans later. And if we've got some wheat, obviously that gets in first. But soybeans are generally the last thing we get to. And, you know, when you think about across the country, soybeans are kind of last in line for everything. Last in line for fertilizer and definitely last in line for planting and scouting. So we just want to put a little focus on some of these crops like sorghum today. We're going to focus on a little bit on the show. Yesterday it was soybeans. Let's put each crop that we're raising on the farm first and think about, all right, what can I do on every single acre this year to make money? Because we're going to need it. And it's really not as hard as you think. So we'll give you a little encouragement on the sorghum on today's program. And also, again, we'll take your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic is proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation. And patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. You know, so much going on in the news and in the markets. Wanted to bring Scott Harms on with Grain PhD today. Scott, how you doing today?
Very good, Darren. Happy New Year, a week late.
Yeah, happy new year to you as well. Now, it's been a couple of weeks since we've talked, and the markets certainly have a lot going on right now with all that's happening in China and more. And also this government shutdown. What impact has the government shutdown had on prices?
Well, it's a real mess, obviously. And I'd say the real impact has been that it's kind of created more of a sideways, until today, more of a sideways, low-volume market. We've just kind of chopped around. Every day we're down. The next day we're up. And, you know, there's just not the same kind of information that's available to the marketplace to trade off of that you would have if you had, like, a trending market one way or the other. So we see a lot of chop. On the export side, we are still getting export commitments that come out every Monday. The inspectors that at these locations, they're still getting paid, so that information comes out every Monday, so we get a little bit of a taste on the export side. But we're not getting those daily export announcements that this market's kind of craving right now with all the China news and rumors going about. We're not getting those, and we're now also not getting the weekly export sales that come out every Thursday morning. On top of that, we're not getting commitment to traders reports. Those come out every Friday, and that tells us where the funds are positioned in the market. So a lot of stuff we're not getting. Probably the most important is the USDA January production report. It's the biggest report of the season as we get the final production number for 2018 data. We also get the winter wheat seedings, and we get December stocks. So a lot of information comes out in the report. It's supposed to come out tomorrow. It was announced last week that it wasn't going to because they need a week to get things compiled. Apparently they have all the data, but they can't, they're not in their offices to put it all together. So once the government reopens, whenever that will be, then they'll get together, and hopefully a week later we'll get a January production report, which is a real shame because that's, you know, the report that I've been kind of counting on to give this corn market a boost, as I think we're going to see a lower yield number, a lower production number, and carryover, translate into carryover as well. So unfortunately, that bullish information, I think, is being locked in an office somewhere in Washington, and someday, hopefully, we'll get that.
Yeah. Anything it takes to get bullish information for this market right now when we've got lots of crap in the bins, that would be okay with me.
All
right, Scott. So, you know, a lot of winter meetings getting started. We start our Ag PhD winter workshops next week. And ahead of those, we're going to be talking with the Grain PhD folks. If you come early to some of our workshops, you'll hear that discussion as well. One of the things that I've been hearing at some of the other workshops that I've been going to, a lot of talk about short-dated options. I know you've talked about them on the show before, but can you talk about how those short-dated options work?
Yeah, when we look at new crop, we're talking about 2019 crop, the new crop. We look at new crop hedge protection. You know, we look at for corn, we look at the December contract, and for beans, we look at the November contract as the first new crop months. Well, there's options associated with those months as well, and they expire in November and October, respectively. So when you want to hedge your 2019 production in the past, you had to look to those options. And a big part of option prices is time. And so when you're paying for all that time, you're paying 8 to 10 months of time value, it can be kind of cost prohibitive for a hedge program. So about 5 years ago, they introduced these short-dated options so that the customer can choose their own expiration to manage within their program. And so it also helps to manage the capital that it takes to run a hedge program. So starting in April every year, there are options that expire every month through September. So every you can pick your own. If you want to re-own inventory for the summer months, you can do that. If you want to buy an option that has short-term expiration, you can do that. So you fit that into your plan. So for example, a June 940 put today or yesterday was cost around 20 cents if you bought the June option that expires in late May, so it costs 20 cents. If you wanted that same protection using the old traditional option, it would cost you twice as much. So you get a shorter time frame, but you get to pay less for it, so you can use, you know, your hedge capital perhaps in other areas. So it's really changed the discussion when we talk to customers about their marketing programs and all the alternatives that are available.
Well, I like the idea of being about half the price. That's kind of a good deal. But let me just run these numbers in. Okay, you said a June 940 short-dated put And you pay 20 cents for that. So really 940 minus that 20 cents that I pay in, my hedge position is then around 920, right?
Yeah, that's the accurate way to look at that strategy, no question. But it's not the exact, it's not exactly the way we want our customers to look at it. When we buy options in the grain markets, and this has been, you know, for all time, you know, grain options, they're like buying an insurance policy. You really don't want to use it, but it's real nice to have if something goes horribly wrong. So when we develop a marketing plan, we want to make sales based on time and based on price. So if your plan is to sell 20% of your crop, your soybean crop by late May, let's say, for example, we may look at these options just as insurance during that time frame. So they expire in late May. You buy that put option. You own it in case something crazy happens to the downside. In the meantime, you're waiting for your target to get triggered. So it buys you some time. So, and then we say the market rallies for whatever reason in early April, and you're able to get those sales off. Maybe you had your offer in to sell it at 10/20 basis December future, November futures. Then you would just exit. You'd step aside on that option that you purchased as that insurance policy, because you don't need that insurance policy on those bushels anymore. So you would take a loss on the option, but they provided the comfort that you needed, and they allowed you to be more patient waiting for your price, knowing that your downside wasn't totally unprotected. So I think we don't really want people to look at it as a flat line price is 920. When you buy this option, that's what you're going to get for your grain. The plan is to set a price floor with the time, buy yourself some time, waiting for something positive to happen, get your triggered sales on the upside, step aside on the options, and, you know, take a little bit of a loss, but then you move on with your marketing. So the short-dated options really help with that.
Okay, what are some other ways that I can use these short-dated options in my marketing plan?
Some people like to sell call options as part of a hedge program. The benefit to the short-dated options when you're selling calls is you don't have to hold them all through the summer waiting for that time value to erode in your favor. You get a little shorter-term, short time frame, and you don't have to hold them through the summer in case there would be some kind of catastrophic weather event that happened in the summer that sent markets sharply higher. So you can sell a July short-dated, let's look in a corn, you can sell a July short-dated corn call for 420 calls, I'm sorry, for 10 cents. And those options expire in late July. If prices are below 420 basis December futures at the time of expiration, then that 10 cents is yours. You just add that to your bottom line, add that to your profitability statement. And if the market's above 420 at expiration, well, you know, that's probably a good thing because you probably have a lot of other bushels yet to sell. So they just set the option expiration a little bit differently so that you can capture that before maybe a pollination problem. The other use that we use them for is that they're really important for is to prevent market inactivity. So we see a rally in the late winter, early spring here in the next few months. One of the biggest fears that a lot of farmers deal with is it's not prices falling lower, but it's in fact prices going higher after they've made some sales. So if these options could provide the flexibility in a plan. So let's say that you're lucky enough and disciplined enough to get some sales off early here in 2019 for the 2019 crop, then the market pulls back and say the weather is favorable going into spring and prices slip back quite a bit. You can always step back in using these short-dated options and reopen the upside on those bushels or some of those bushels that you had already sold. So there's August short-dated call options that expire in late July. So in corn, for example, if you saw a slip back in prices, you wanted to buy those August short-dated calls. You don't have to pay a bunch of time value. They'll expire in late July, but they'll get you through pollination period in case something crazy happens. So they're really used to provide flexibility in a plan. Don't be afraid to sell when the prices present an opportunity early in the year, because you can always step back in with these short-dated options and re-own.
All right, Scott Harms with Grain PhD. Scott, we'll see you over in Bloomington on Wednesday talking about Grain PhD and the markets and what's heading on. So look forward to seeing you then. Thanks a lot, Scott.
Looking forward to it. Take care. Bye.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio. We'll be right back after this.
One year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions. Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Our phone lines will be open throughout the show to take your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty, or Darren Hefty. I promised you we'd talk a little about sorghum today, and we've got Adam with us right now. He farms down in the state of Kansas. Adam, how's it going?
Oh, it's pretty good. We just can't seem to dry out down here. We had a couple inches of rain right after Christmas, and so we're going to be soaked up for quite a little bit. And once it does dry out, we're sure going to have a busy spring.
Seems like you've been in the snow belt, too, through this winter.
Well, we had crazy snow early, which was, you know, not seasonal, obviously. And then we had 2 inches of rain the day after Christmas, and we had just had guys being able to get out in the field, put on some anhydrous and strip till for the corn ground. And, you know, it's just going to be a little bit of a challenge this spring, especially a lot of our soybeans went out, kind of some wet ground. And so we're going to have to do some correctional tillage on some of the ruts that happened during harvest there. But we'll just have to figure it out and deal with it this spring.
You know, I got sorghum on the mind today. What's the outlook look like for sorghum going into this next year?
Well, for us, our sorghum acres are going to be up quite a bit, partly rotational, and then with the China soybean thing, the way it is, our yields make soybeans pretty tough to work with the herbicide programs that we need to have good weed control. And we're pretty good at keeping our sorghum acres rotated. So we've been able to have good weed control the last several years. And our biggest challenge has been headworms. I'm actually going to Australia tomorrow on a sorghum trip, being sponsored by a company that sells a biological control for headworm called Helgen that we used this year. And that was actually a product that worked really well for pyrethroid-resistant headworms.
Interesting. Yeah, the pyrethroid resistance thing is big. And I realize that for a lot of growers that are listening today, they may say, oh, I've heard about it in another state. We don't have it in our area. If you're hearing about it elsewhere, you're going to have it in your area too. So we got to be smart about this. So what has been done? So you're starting to use a biological. That's a good way to go around this. Are you using other insecticide modes of action as well?
There are some guys that are using the wormicides, which I can't think of right now. A little higher dollar option, which a Prevathon. Guys
sure.
have been using Prevathon, and they've been having good luck. But this past year, we had it seemed like the guy who sprayed early pyrethroid, especially in their soybeans, they had good control if they sprayed early. And then I don't know if like another resistant wave of moss came in, but then it went from 1 week everyone was having good control to the next week nothing was being killed, and so I think it's something guys are really going to have to start managing and being on top of, at least in this area.
Wow. Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, you don't want to mess around with that. You mentioned you're fixing some ruts out there after some of the soybean fields, and that's going to be a challenge, and obviously having a good seed bed for sorghum is important. Any other tips going into sorghum planting this spring?
Well, I think, you talked about on that tillage. I mean, I really prefer to go in with the straight no-till and try to maintain as much of that residue as we can, especially if you're growing sorghum. I'm assuming you're planning on having some drought stress, and if we can keep as much of that residue on as we can, that sure is going to benefit that sorghum crop later on. I think here there's been the debate on, do we plant early and try to beat sugarcane aphids, or do we plant late and try to catch some late rains? What we're seeing in our area is that the beneficials are seeming to keep the sugarcane aphids a little bit under control, as long as we can spray a biological or a product like Prevathon that's going to leave the beneficial insects out there alone. You might get a little bit of a sugarcane infestation, but this last year we saw that the beneficials were able to knock them back.
Yeah, we're seeing more new products coming into the market too to kill sugarcane aphids without hurting all the beneficials, and I totally agree with you. If we can accomplish both of those things, we've got a pretty good program in place. Adam, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on, and good luck on your trip to Australia. That should be fun.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet. I got Michael on with us right now, also farms down in Kansas. Michael, how's it going today?
It's going pretty good. We're having pretty nice weather here.
Good, good. Adam said his sorghum acres are going to be up for 2019. How about on your farm?
It's going to stay about the same. We got some rotation restrictions, and as much as I'd like to grow more of it, I have some fields that just wouldn't be safe to plant it to because I've got shatter cane or other weed issues that can't be controlled very well with sorghum.
Yeah, I got introduced to shatter cane about 25 years ago, and we didn't have a problem on our farm, but started working with some guys that did. That is not a fun weed to have to fight, especially, it looks like sorghum when it's coming up.
Well, it is the same species, so...
Yeah, when you think about it, something that's that close, it is pretty difficult. So what are you rotating in? Soybeans to try to take it out, or where are you finding a good way to get rid of that?
Sometimes I'll rotate in some Roundup corn.
Okay.
But we're in a dryland area, and corn struggles to yield much better than sorghum. A good year it will, and a bad year it bombs. That's one alternative for helping, but usually you get some late growth at the shatter cane that won't be controlled. Don't spray Roundup or glyphosate after silking, let's put it that way. And so soybeans are another option, and trying to stack multiple years of wheat to keep it, winter wheat, to keep it open during the summer so that I can attack it with Roundup or are the most useful tools. Just not growing sorghum at all, I guess, is the simplest way to attack it.
How did the fall turn out for you? Did you get the winter wheat in that you wanted to plant?
No. I got a lot of it in, but it's get after the crop insurance date and you get into November with winter wheat. And, well, we got, you know, another couple hundred acres and we'd like to plant it, but, what's the point? Right.
Yeah.
Now? So, and that's unfortunate. The field I'm thinking about, I'm looking at it right now in my window, is one that, does have terrible shatter cane. So it's going to go to the soybeans.
Sure, sure. Yep. What do you find? Okay, so outside of shatter cane, what are some of the bigger challenges for you with sorghum?
One is economic, the uncertainty on where it's going to be sold when the Chinese stop buying. When they buy, it's worth more than corn. When they don't, it's worth less. The other big challenge is probably the weed control issue, because there's not very often that anybody comes out with a new sorghum herbicide. And when we have something like Palmer amaranth that's resistant to almost everything out there, you don't have a lot of choices.
Yeah, that tends to be a tough weed no matter what crop we're talking about. How about on the mm-hmm. fertility side? What's your strategy for fertilizer when you're growing a sorghum?
For here, I'm aiming for a yield and in excess of 100 bushels an acre. I actually plan on 120 to 130 for a yield goal, and I will usually put down somewhere 100 to 130 pounds of nitrogen, depending on how much is in the soil, and always a little bit of phosphate. So I don't, even though Milo is not a heavy user of the phosphate, and a lot of times a little bit of sulfur and zinc if the soil tests call for it.
Yeah, the sulfur thing's getting to be a big deal anymore, and I'm hearing more and more guys talking about how that's helped them out, and especially with nitrogen utilization, but just keeping that crop green mm-hmm. and healthy looking all through the season.
Yeah, I'm seeing the soil tests coming back each year with lower and lower numbers, so I know I'm either mining it or it's washing away.
Yep. Yeah, that's one to keep an eye on. Hey, Michael, thank you so much. Really appreciate you sharing a little bit about what's going on your farm this year, and hopefully it's a terrible year for shatter cane, so that isn't a problem this year on your farm. Hey, thanks a lot, Michael. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Ag PhD Radio.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say, Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor Herbicide Brands. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
We started utilizing the Duo React system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips so you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Talking about sorghum on today's show, and also taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Pleased to have Wayne Cleveland on with us right now. He's the executive director of the Texas Grain Sorghum Producers. Wayne, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Darren. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
All right, this is probably going to surprise you, but we already had the Chinese market come up in our discussion. What are you hearing out of these trade talks? Is there going to be something done with China? Are they going to start buying a bunch of sorghum again?
You know, I think they'll come back eventually. There's absolutely too much demand. We were there fourth quarter of last year. That's a real demand. They use a lot of the grain sorghum to produce their liquor of choice, which is Baijiu. We learned that sorghum actually gives it its unique aroma, so there's nothing really to replace it. So it is to Baijiu what agave is to tequila. They're running short, like everything else, so I feel like a resolution's pretty close.
Interesting. All right. How about other markets? Where is the sorghum going right now?
You know, if there was a silver lining, Darren, it was that we found other markets that will buy sorghum, not because of its value compared to corn, but because some amino acid matrix traits that are inherent to sorghum. We did some work in Spain with the U.S. Grains Council right when the China market fell apart. They've been a great buyer. They've bought about 500,000 metric tons. Of course, Mexico is kind of our relief market, our backstop. They continue to buy. They're very price conscious. They like to buy at a lower value to corn. So also Peru has a lot of promise. We did some trade work in Peru. Basically, what's holding them back is liquidity. They don't want to get into a market and start buying grain sorghum and have to wean themselves off of it when a more dominant market such as China comes back into play.
Yeah, that sure is a big market in China, and I can see why others might be a little bit intimidated. But you're right. This has been there are some silver linings here where there are some good things that have happened in all this, and hopefully going forward that means an even better market for our sorghum growers. How about ethanol, Wayne? Is that a big player for sorghum?
You know, it was so good when China fell apart because the ethanol folks were a great backstop for a lot of grain sorghum that would have really bottomed out really quick. A lot of those guys came in and bought a lot of grain sorghum on its way down. They did a big service to the market. Whether they used it in ethanol or not, I'm not sure, but they did provide a backstop. A few of our plants in Texas are idle now, as you're keenly aware of the price of ethanol, what's going on in the fuel market, but they've been great partners of ours. Our national group does a lot of work for them. Statewide, we do a lot of work for them. We want to keep them healthy. They're a great domestic market, and if our growers could have it anyway, they would have a very vibrant domestic market before anything else, and ethanol's provided that for grain sorghum.
What's going on in Texas right now with the sorghum industry? I mean, I sure hear a lot of producers talking about, hey, sorghum's going to at least hold its own in our rotation and maybe even take up some more acres going into next year.
I think so. I think there's a collective sigh of relief. You probably heard it audibly. For 2018 coming to an end, it was a miserable year in Texas for most commodities as a whole. Our guys today are in what I call a weather plant situation. I've visited with a lot of growers. It's wet. This is the antithesis to this time last year when it was dry. and it's too wet. Our guys are planting what they can plant, when they can plant. There's a lot of wheat going in right now, and in South Texas they'll plant wheat until they can't do it anymore. Grain sorghum's next up to bat, so if the weather's conducive and it's dry enough to plant, they'll plant a lot of grain sorghum. Then, of course, cotton follows that with corn intermingled in between all of those. The High Plains is always a toss-up. Those guys like to plant a lot of cotton. Cotton prices aren't so good. So we think we'll hold acres static, and then we always pick up those failed-out cotton acres in the middle of June towards the 1st of July. So if there's a big hail, you know, that always drives our acres up in failed cotton.
You know, you had mentioned the amino acids and looking at some different uses and so forth with sorghum. What are some of the other research and development things going on?
You know, I think one of the most exciting things is the waxy sorghum that some of our growers are starting to grow. It has a little lower amylase in it, which makes it a little more digestible in the human, in the gut, whether it's a human gut or rumen or in the gut of an ethanol plant. It just breaks down a little easier, a little cleaner. We're starting to do a lot more research on it. We've got 6 container loads headed over to China to work within their bioindustry there to see how it works. So we have a lot of good stuff going on. We have a group headed over to Australia tomorrow with the sorghum checkoff, kind of see what they're doing right and what they're doing wrong, to look at some of their varieties. You know, a lot of good stuff comes out of there. It certainly kind of revamped our cotton industry about 20 years ago. And you know, outside of that is just basic nutritional research. How do we work in different animal species, not compared to corn? What do we have that separates us from the market? And we're starting to find a lot of those things, specifically in swine feeds, in some poultry feeds. You know, how do these work, and how do we differentiate it? And as our measurements get better, as our ability to determine the difference between those amino acids and what it means to animal protein, we're starting to separate some of those things out and see a premium in some markets. So research dollars definitely are critical to our industry, and they're starting to pay pretty good dividends for us, Darren.
Yeah, I agree. The research is just huge with all these crops. And I know farmers listening that aren't raising sorghum are really happy when we hear new uses getting developed for any crop, because it benefits all of us. So we're all behind you on that, no doubt about it. Wayne, it's been great talking to you here. And you mentioned, I'm so glad 2018 is over. Wow, the drought that a lot of Texas faced, I don't wish that on anybody. That was amazing. And then the heat that came along with it, too. I don't know if anything survived through that. Did even sorghum survive through that?
You know, it did, but literally, you know, across a turn row, one field produced and the other didn't. But, you know, what I've come to find out with the weather and all of these trade deals is we're really blessed with some resilient, tough patriots. And they understand adversity, and they understand weather, and they understand governments. And it's just a pleasure to work for these guys. They get it. They're great Americans. They're great stewards of the land, and it's a pleasure to work for them. So I have very little to complain about compared to the folks that I work for.
I've been talking with Wayne Cleveland, Executive Director of the Texas Grain Sorghum Producers. Wayne, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time and all the info today.
Yes, sir, Darren. Thank you guys for what y'all do.
You bet. Best of luck going into 2019. And, you know, we all need it in farming today. But, man, there's some opportunity in sorghum, and that's one of the reasons we wanted to talk about that today. So really glad to hear from Wayne. There's all kinds of stuff going on and lots of reasons to be enthusiastic. When we were talking with Michael a little bit earlier up in Kansas, we got into the fertility discussion just a little bit. And I wanted to bring that part full circle. If you're putting sorghum in this year, here's one of the differences that we saw. And I know talking with producers in Texas, and Wayne mentioned, we'd see one field right across the road from another where one would be able to hang in there a little bit longer than the other. And sometimes there's differences in soil texture and so forth where one holds a little more moisture. But one of the keys to hold more moisture in your soil is to get the right balance of fertility out there too. And one of the things that's getting forgotten in sorghum, Michael had mentioned it, was sulfur. But the other thing I think is phosphorus. When we look at what a sulfur crop needs, yes, we need a lot of nitrogen, but number two on that list is phosphate, and we need about two-thirds as much as we do nitrogen. So making sure we've got available phosphate has been really key. I've got a friend that farms down in Texas right in the middle of that drought last year, and he said it was just unbelievable the difference where they had good fertility levels versus where they didn't. And I get it. Sorghum's a pretty tough, resilient crop and can hang in there in some tough weather like a lot of the growers experienced last year. But that's one thing to watch for is just what are your fertility levels. Get some good soil sampling done if you haven't already, if you got sorghum going in soon, and get ahead of this thing. I know in Texas a lot of those guys are itching to plant as soon as field conditions dry up and are ready. And it's been wet so far, and I get it. It's hard to get out there and get those samples done. But if you haven't done it yet, get them done and get some fertilizer out there ahead of your sorghum crop so you can be successful. Okay, started off the show mentioning we got a bunch of Ag PhD mailbag questions to get to. We're going to get to those right after this break, so stay with us. And if you have a question, you can either call in at 844-44-AG-PHD or send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We'll be right back.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
No secrets here, we all know. Regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro-liquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro-liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic is proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We've been talking about sorghum, but our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD if you'd like to call with any agronomic question. We've got Brent on right now up in Minnesota. Brent, sounds like E3 is on your mind.
Yeah, E3 is definitely on my mind. Not that we're
starving for that technology here, but always want to get a head start on genetics.
Sure,
and what plot information is going to be available, or who has been working with, you know, these E3 beans and the genetics to go along with them, so that when we do get the chance to plant them, which obviously is getting closer and closer by the day now with some approval of the trait, you know, just kind of want to get your opinion on what's out there and what to expect for, you know, varieties and information to go along with them.
Sure. Great questions. Okay. The one thing that's still kind of hanging over E3 or the Enlist soybeans right now is they're waiting for Philippine approval. And the Philippines do not have import approval yet. And I'm not sure if that's going to be a huge roadblock or not. They're expecting to get that in the first quarter of 2019 here. So if that happens, it'll be before any of these beans go in the ground. So you'll be able to know before you plant them, hey, will I be able to haul the elevator for sure? Or is there still a question about that out there? So that would be one thing right now. We're waiting for Philippine approval of import on our soybeans. So then the next thing is, how do you pick good varieties? How long have they been doing research? What kind of plot data is going to be out there? And at this point, none of that data has been released because the trait hasn't been released, but there have been plots done. There's been a lot of research now over the last, gosh, quite a few years. We've been looking at them in the field for at least 4 or 5 years now. And so they've gotten several generations down the road where they're pretty competitive. So last year, I go to a lot of these soybean breeder plots, and they had some of these new Enlist soybeans right next to Liberty beans, right next to the Liberty Link GT27 beans, next to Extend beans, next to Roundup 2s, next to Roundup 1s. So all the traits that were anticipated to be labeled for this year in one spot. And the challenge with stuff like that is they've got to destroy some of those things, like the Enlist beans in some areas. Like, we had some at our Ag PhD field that we had to destroy them before they put seed on. But there were some plots that had special approvals to be able to do some comparisons. And, man, they look good. They look, I would say, equally as good as anything we've got on the market now. And since they're so many generations into this thing, they were anticipating having a full label like 4 years ago. They've got good disease tolerance and good yield characteristics now.
Yeah, and actually, 5 years ago, I had some exposure with the Enlist corn platform. So, you know, I personally have been able to do a crop destruct plot and had those types of interactions with that technology. And personally, I'm looking forward to it. And just exactly, there isn't any published data yet for the, you know, what to expect for yields or varieties, but I know that I personally am keeping a close eye on it and waiting for those pieces of information to come available.
What we're hearing from seed companies is they're anticipating, so they don't even have a license yet. I think the only company that's got a license at this point is Stein, because they're involved in the development, but they're not out pushing anything yet because they're waiting for Philippines approval too. But from what I've heard in the industry, they anticipate the Corteva group will be signing on licensees here in the next week or so. And so you'll start to hear a lot of seed companies talk about it and maybe share some of the internal data that they've got and share which varieties there are. I know there's varieties as early as early group zeros, and then all the way up for sure into the group fours. I'm not sure how much material they've got later than that, but a lot of material for a good chunk of the country. And there was quite a bit of seed production. The Dow, or now Corteva folks, kind of stuck their neck out this year. They really thought this was going to be the year, and there's a lot of units of seed. So I think for growers that say, man, if that gets full approval everywhere and I can plant it and deliver it to my local grain buyer, I'm going to jump on board. And I think there's going to be enough seed to cover, boy, I don't know what percentage of acres, but I would sure think at least a third of the acres out there.
Yeah. Well, and it's like anything, we still need to find the right plants for the right acres. So getting a head start on that is kind of where I'm trying to get my feet on the ground with new products.
Yep, absolutely. I think, well, for sure there's going to be seed production done by a lot of different companies, because the way it sounds, at least from the Corteva folks, it sounds like they've got most seed companies interested in having some Enlist soybeans. And I got my brother Brian on the line now too. You know, one of the things that we've been excited about is just having the experience with the herbicide portion, both in the Enlist cotton, but also just right around our field day site, where we've got all kinds of different susceptible crops. And we just haven't seen an issue with that new 240 colon. It's been a huge, huge improvement.
Yeah. Yep. Well, like I said, I did get to do a plot with Enlist and got to spray it and use it, and actually took some of that information and shared my experiences with the EPA. This was quite a few years ago now, and you know, using the product, it is definitely something that is very user friendly, and it definitely has the characteristics that we're looking for with herbicide, especially with sensitive crops nearby or other things. We were able to do with our plot, stuck out the boom 30 inches outside of the plot, and we're able to show in the buffer zone where the herbicide was killing our buffer strip, and it would, you know, didn't move hardly at all. And we intentionally were pushing the, you know, we went right up to where the label was.
Yeah, like just to see the what if.
Yep, to see the what if, and it really does go down and apply very, very nicely. So it's definitely a product that I'm really looking forward to, just to have another option to put in the rotation for herbicides and keeping good tools sharp.
You bet. Well, you know, it's certainly one of those things, and I appreciate the call, Brent. We're gonna be all over Enlist too, talking about it on the show and on our TV program. And I know there's going to be a lot of seed production acres going in with folks that we work with too. So yeah, stay in touch, Brent. And as we get a little closer towards spring, when a lot of this information comes out, we'd love to share it with you.
Yeah, I'm hoping I can get it. If we can get approval nationwide, I know I'm looking for a total change in my plot rotation of what I'm checking for genetics.
Awesome. Well, great. Well, thanks a lot, Brent. We really appreciate the call today.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Let's jump into the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag.
All right, Brian, you ready for some mailbag questions?
Fire away.
Okay. Mark says, I'm a farmer in Michigan working with heavy soils. Now, heavy to Mark means a CEC of 15 to 25. And I make that distinction because heavy soils mean different things to different people. But for Mark in Michigan, it's 15 to 25 CEC. So I'm trying to get a better understanding of the limiting factors in my soil, as our fertility levels are generally high. I'm wondering what you think about that. I'd love to have Neil Kinsey come up, but maybe I need to get a local agronomist up here in Michigan. Hey, Mark, thanks for the question. And you know, the cool thing about Neil Kinsey is he's put a lot of his knowledge into print. So you can certainly get a book like Hands on Agronomy. You can check out, you can look online and find the books that Neil's written. That'd probably be my best place to start. And yeah, finding somebody that kind of follows those same principles up in Michigan would be cool too. Any other recommendations you've got, Brent?
Was there a question in that somewhere?
No. I guess he's looking if we would recommend any specific agronomist in his area. I don't know any specific agronomist in your area, Mark.
Specific agronomist. Yeah, no, I don't know.
I don't know either, I'd read Neil's book and empower yourself to have a pretty good level of knowledge.
Right. I encourage people, learn it yourself. I mean, you absolutely can do it. You're smart enough.
All right. You know, having a lot of questions about our upcoming winter workshops. You know, we're getting started with those coming up on Monday, and you can find all the details at agphd.com. Just click on the events tab, and it'll pull up a menu of where all these events are at. And we'd encourage you to pre-register. That way we've got plenty of materials, plenty of food, and everything there for you. The workshops are free. We would love to have you come and check out what we're up to and some of the new research and data that we've got from this past year as well. So again, that's agphd.com. Click on the events tab and you can pre-register for any of the upcoming Ag PhD winter workshops. Thanks for listening to our program today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now, stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.